So in last, well, Mr. Miles actually commented on our last podcast, and he wanted us to talk about misleading graphs. So everyone in the group was able to get an example of a misleading graph. For example,
first of all, welcome back.
Yeah.
We're
going
to talk about the book How to Lie with Statistics. We read the chapters 5 to 8,
mm-hmm.
Which are mainly about misleading graphs, and there's an extra thing at the end. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, because most of the chapters we're talking about is just about misleading graphs and how y-axis and x-axis change, like an illustration of like how people view it. So we're all going to show our examples of misleading graphs that were researched. So, for example, here's mine. It's a bar graph. It's sales in millions of dollars, but all the bars look different because apparently 335.106 million looks different because of the proportion ratio of the bar graph. Because
yeah, it doesn't even have numbers on
it.
It doesn't
even have a y-axis or well, it has an x-axis because it has like all
well,
the
yeah,
years.
It's just a bar graph, but yeah.
But if it had, now I have another photo. This is when the y-axis is added. Now that looks proportionally better. Once you add in like a y-axis, you're able to have a better graph and like a better visualization of like what this means. So now everything's close to each other and better proportionally rated. Anyone else want to show their graph?
So my graph is basically the picture with the baseball and the basketball. This is something kind of like what it went into the went into this in the book a lot about how like they make the second image seem like 2 times as high, but in actuality like the ratio is actually 4 to 1 because it's 2 times as high but also 2 times as wide.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that to really reiterate the fact that like the second number is significantly bigger than the first number, even if it's not actually significantly bigger.
Right.
So they just really, they try and like trick you with your eye,
you
so you're not really paying attention.
Super
yeah,
big.
The basketball looks huge. You read the other one.
Mine is very similar to Bella's. They do the same exact thing. I have two candy corns. The second candy corn is supposed to be 2 times as big, but, you know, just like Bella said, they didn't just make it 2 times as big. They multiplied everything. And it's also trying to make it two-dimensional on one-dimensional data.
The area of the figure is not changing by the same amount as
mm-hmm.
the data.
It's
changing,
it's just,
by,
it's
changing by
to show.
Twice the amount that the data is changing, which is misleading, making the second number look a lot larger than the first.
Like, it's just trying to show that it's that this is obviously bigger, right?
Mm-hmm. So the graph I found is it's about home price increases, and it has bars from years 1998 and 1999, and the 1998 one is 3 or 4 times smaller than the 1999 one. And it looks so tiny because they've truncated the y-axis. Instead of going from 0 to 83,000, it goes from 79,000 to 83,000. And thus you see what looks like a 3 to 4 time difference when in fact it's only a difference of about $2,000. So this is just, whoever made this graph is just showing that, or trying to make the viewer think that the difference is a lot larger than it actually is.
So basically what these chapters talked about in the beginning, I'm pretty sure it was like in chapter 5, they just kind of basically talked about like cutting the graph in half.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they, like by cutting the graph in half, you have a smaller thing to look at and then your bars seem like more exaggerated, and that's how it like kind of misleads a person to make it feel like one side is so much bigger than the other.
Like they do that just to draw attention so
yeah.
people see it faster or...
Yeah.
Or just be like,
so like in
wow,
a way with
cool.
if you're not really reading the numbers, you just see like, oh, this is way bigger than this.
Yeah.
You
mm-hmm.
just don't really give
because
it much second thought.
The average viewer, average.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many of us, if we seen this on the news, would look at the axes on this?
I'm
we
not,
would
I'm
look
not,
right.
Yeah.
right.
I would,
look at these
yeah.
bars and be like, wow, like the
yeah.
difference is
I'm not
so
even looking
amazed.
At, I'm honestly, I'm not even looking at the numbers
looking at
that
the
they
percentage
are.
Either, because they also use such a tiny font.
Yeah.
They use such an exaggerated color, and they make the bar graph just stand out. So
all
you're
you
not
look
questioning
at the
them.
You don't really read
yeah.
it or anything.
You're just into the shiny bar graph.
Yeah, it's real shiny. Yeah, yeah, like the bars
and the
are
big
gold.
Words that say if Bush tax cuts expire.
Yeah. And then another thing that the book said, if you kept going, was how they like stretch the y-axis a lot, like Andrew said, like especially in this one. Like the one example in the book, they turned the y-axis and it went up by like 0.1
mm-hmm.
every time. So then
mm-hmm.
it made it seem like significantly different. But meanwhile, it only went from like 30 to 31, but there was like all these different data points, and it really, so that's how advertisers or whoever makes these graphs uses it to, like, really stretch it and, like, extend it. If we go back to, like, what we were saying about the basketballs and baseballs and the candy corn, kind of, like, they use bad ratios in that because it, like we said, it doesn't only double one way, it doubles, like, every way.
And, Andrew, you were talking about, what? Hmm? When it doubles, it's not just doubling.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because if you take a square that's one by one, and you double the length of each side, the area of the square is now 4.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you double the size of the figure, you multiply its area by 4, which is why when people use two-dimensional figures for one-dimensional data, bigger numbers look a lot bigger when they should only look a little bigger.
Which makes it, which illustrates it bigger on the graph.
Yeah, and then, like we said, it makes it seem so different and, like, oh, such a significant size difference.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, when people don't read the numbers, you're just like, oh, this basketball's bigger than the other one. Must mean ticket sales went up or something like that. Like,
and especially when they use images like that, like,
mm-hmm.
are you really going to pay attention to what they're trying to sell you? You see a big basketball, you're like, oh, I'm game.
Yeah, obviously, it's about this sport. It's like, what is it, though?
Yeah.
Mm. Another thing they also talked on, something that's familiar to all of us, which is correlation and doesn't imply causation.
Oh, yeah.
That was a really big chapter in the end.
Post hoc.
Yeah. So, anyone?
People like to think that when things happen after something else, the first thing caused the second one.
Well, Andrew, you didn't know that drownings go up when ice cream sales go up?
Yeah.
Milk.
I mean,
and rape has correlation?
Yeah, there's a clear correlation between, you know, ice cream sales and drowning. So
it's
pretty obvious that eating ice cream makes you drown.
They cause each other.
Yeah.
So, like, the book used the example, the first thing the book led with in that chapter was that they found a really high correlation between smoking cigarettes and low college grades.
Mm-hmm.
Which, at first glance, you read that, you're like, oh, definitely, that causes it. Like, one could cause the other. The book talked about how, like, it could be flipped. You don't really know which way. The low grades cause cigarette smoking, or does cigarette smoking cause low grades? But either way, like, it could really... like, you can understand either side of it, but...
And then when I personally see, sorry to interrupt you, arguments like that, I feel like people could run with that so fast, especially smoking and low grades. If they get even just a little correlation, they're going to run with that to the end and say, 100%. You know, smoking causes bad grades because you will end up like this, which then gets you this, and now you're like, in jail.
It's like those DirecTV commercials.
It's just a never-ending cycle on how they mislead you, and then they're going to use the visuals and just keep, like, manipulating their data.
Yeah, I agree. And then the book talked about how there's a lot of other scenarios that are really, that, like, show correlation, but, like, there's not really a way to find, like, that third variable. They talk about, like, a third variable that actually means...
Oh, yeah, that was chapter 7, right?
Yeah, that, like, actually caused stuff, like... Like an in-between kind of thing that people don't consider.
It was about how, the chapter's called Semi-Attached Figure, basically about how people often try to prove something by proving something else.
Yeah.
Let me find an example. Like, there's this one example in the book of a laboratory that reports that a medication kills 31,108 germs in 11 seconds.
Test tube.
That
germs.
Doesn't actually mean. Yeah, but that doesn't actually mean that the cold will be effective at curing the medication will be effective at curing the cold.
Yeah.
Because how do you know? Like, you don't even know if the germs are the same type as the ones that cause
you. Yeah,
cold.
Like, you don't know. Yeah, exactly. You don't know if the germs that they just killed are actually the germs that are cold.
They're trying to prove that the medication is effective by proving.
And it said that that people use this strategy because they know that they can't actually prove that their medicine cures the cold. Yeah.
It's the same way they use the word average. If you just throw germs on there, you're going to get that cold medicine and be like, oh, it kills so many
germs.
Like, it's
germs
great. You don't even know what germ, like, you're trying to attack.
It's probably, like, the most harmless basic germ, like, out there. Like, I don't know a lot
you
about germs.
You do need germs to live.
True.
Yeah, you do.
Killing germs is not good.
Did the book use any examples that weren't related to each other? I don't remember.
Well, the one I just said.
Oh, right.
Yeah, like, so they talked about the medicine killing germs when killing germs doesn't actually mean it cures the cold. It just means it kills the germs.
Okay.
So it was, like, partially related, and the reader's supposed to say, oh, it obviously cures the cold because it kills 31,000 germs. Because in reality, those are unrelated.
Yeah, because if you're just reading it quickly, like, you're not really paying that much attention. Mm. You're like, oh, like, if you're sick in a story, you just go in the story, you're like, I just need to find a medicine that's going to make this pain go away. You're like, oh, there we go. There's this. It kills these germs. I'm good.
Yeah, we don't know what the cold
germs are.
It's
like the Lysol commercials do that. The Lysol
commercials, hand sanitizers.
Yeah, kills 99.9% of germs. What germs? What are you... Yeah, what are you killing? Is that what's in the air? Is that what I actually need to use Lysol for? Like,
now I question everything.
Yeah, I know. Look what you're doing,
smell
Mr. Miles.
Smells. Smells very nice.
Yeah, like Febreze, too. Febreze says they kill germs.
Not
Febreze.
No, Febreze is just perfume.
Febreze, you just smell the carpet.
Yeah.
That's it.
Odor blockers or something like that.
We're done.
Yeah, I think we pretty much went over everything
this
time around.
We're going to read the last two chapters, and then we'll discuss the entire book next time.
So please leave us any comments, any questions again.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Yes. Follow our pages.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.